So again, everybody, we are delighted to welcome you to our teleconference call today, part of our CCR Lifelong Learning Leadership Initiatives program. I'm Debbie Prinz, Director of Program and Member Services for the CCAR, and I'm moderating the call today. Our prior calls are posted at the website. Recordings of prior calls are posted at the website, along with those of many prior years, and you might have heard the recorder start on this one. We are really excited about the topic for today, Mishkan Tefillah for Children and Youth, and we have several of the leaders of that project involved in our call today, Michelle Shapiro Abraham, Paula Feldstein, Stephen Rao, and Joseph Skloot. And of course, we are grateful to Hera Person for all that she does for the press and for the CCAR. And we want to let you know that if you have questions related to the call today, you can send them to me at my email address, dprinz@ccarnet.org, and we will attempt to answer them towards the end of the call. Also, there are texts posted at the flyer page at the CCAR website so that you can follow along when I believe Michelle presents. You'll want to try to access those if you are at your computer. And as I said, the recording will be posted, so if you miss something, you can access later on to get to the text and to get to the recording through our Lifelong Learning tab at the website. We have a lot of wonderful upcoming events, learning opportunities for you, of course, including convention in Chicago, March 30th to April 2nd, which will include an opportunity to discuss great questions, challenges, and issues where we will learn, discuss, and grow together as colleagues, an opportunity to honor our friend and colleague David Ellenson on his retirement, many opportunities to study and learn, including with Asher Lopatin, Jan Schakowsky, Jill Jacobs, Amy Scheinerman, Mark Wachowski, and many others. And if you're interested in seeing what's pending for a convention, you can take a look at the snapshot, which is posted at the homepage for a convention, the homepage for the CCAR, and also the convention page for at the website. And other upcoming events, in addition to convention, include the tech study series, four sessions with Dr. Rachel Mikva, Dangerous Religious Ideas, which begins February 18th at noon Eastern Time. And as well, we have a lot of other teleconference call opportunities, including a celebration for Israel on Yom HaAtzmaut, where Gidi Grinstein, who was quoted in today's Times in the article by Tom Friedman, Bernard Avishai, and Yehudit Warshaw will be looking at Israel's future, developing Jewish young adults from high school to college and beyond with Lisa Barzilai, Oren Chayon, and others. That one will be April 29th. The Yom HaAtzmaut one will be April 23rd. And upcoming in-person seminars, Rabbi as CEO, Chief Engagement Officer with Larry Dressler, May 5th and 6th in New York City, Monday and Tuesday, and then first 100 days for those rabbis beginning new positions, May 19th through 20th. All of the information about these upcoming learning opportunities are posted at the website, and without further ado, we want to turn to our wonderful speakers and presenters today so that we have the benefit of their experience and learning around Mishkan Tefillah for Children and Youth. They have many wonderful accomplishments. Their bios are posted at the website. So that we save time, I think we should turn to the tech study with Joseph Skloot. So, Joe, would you please start us off?
Sure. Thank you, Debbie. Thank you to Hara and all the other call organizers for inviting me to share this Dvar Torah. And as you all know, the purpose of our call is to discuss the press's new publications, Mishkan Tefillah for Children and for Youth, and the process of creating a Sidur, as our editors know very well, is not an easy task. In fact, as their titles suggest, these books' titles suggest, that the task of creating a Sidur may be fruitfully compared to the complicated task of building the Mishkan. In our Parsha this week, Ki Tisa, we encounter the master craftsman Bezalel, whom God charges with designing and building the Mishkan. And so in Exodus 31, we read the following. The Lord spoke to Moses, "See, I have singled you out by name. I've singled out by name Bezalel, son of Uri, son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah." And then we hear these crucial words, "Va'amale oto ruach Elohim bechokma uvitfuna uvidaat uvachol moacha." God endows Bezalel with three useful character traits, chokma, tvuna, and daat. And Rashi explains these three traits thusly. He says, chokma is what a person hears from other people and learns from them. And we might call this training. Tvuna is that kind of intuitive gut-level understanding one acquires over a lifetime. And we might call this experience. And for Rashi, daat is the Holy Spirit, the God-given gift of prophecy and inspiration. And we might call this in our own terms today, talent. Now, given that he possessed all these wonderful qualities, Bezalel must have been the perfect person to take charge of a project as important as building the Mishkan. Indeed, it may be that these very qualities are necessary to undertake and successfully complete the publication of a Siddur as well, especially ones as beautiful and thoughtful as the ones we will be discussing today. My own academic research focuses on the 16th century, a period when Jews began to create worship spaces that mirrored the Baroque architecture they saw around them. These latter-day Bezalels who designed these beautiful synagogues made sure that they were modest and unassuming on the outside, and ornate and gorgeous on the inside, full of mosaics and murals, double naves, and biblical motifs. And any of you who have visited the synagogues of Venice can testify to this. Similarly, the historian and liturgy scholar Stefan Reif has observed that a parallel trend occurred in the development of prayer books during the 16th century. Harnessing the new technology of printing, Jews created Siddurim that looked externally modest, he says, but were internally ornate, with various fonts and woodcuts and illustrations and notations. The Siddurim of the 16th century, the Siddurim that these Jews prayed from, were works of art, just like the worship spaces they prayed in. And the same can be said of the topic of our discussion today. Endowed with the gifts of chokhmah, tvunah, and da'at, training, experience, and talent, the editors and illustrators of these prayer books have created works of art that will educate and inspire Jews of all ages, but especially our young people. May these Siddurim, like the first printed Siddurim of the 16th century, and like the ancient Mishkan before them, be portable sanctuaries for the next generation of Jews, as they begin their exploration of Jewish life in religious school and beyond.
Joe, thank you so much for that Devar Torah and for starting off our call with such beautiful words, and of course for the work that you do for the CCAR at this point. We're very grateful. And we're going to turn to Paula Feldstein, who will help us understand more about the book. And Paula, we are delighted to welcome you to the call.
Thank you. Joe, thank you for those beautiful words. And I want to say first that the creation of these Siddurim has really been a wonderful group project with a lot of people with a lot of different kinds of talent coming together to contribute and to work on them. And the committee that worked on the Mishkan Tefillah for Youth, which I had the great privilege of working with, was an amazing group of rabbis and rabbi educators and people with experience both in the rabbinate and with children and with parents. And they brought so much to the project and the process. So I want to talk, I actually want to start by talking a little bit about the process of how we started working on the books and how we got to the product, one of which we have and the other of which is still in process. So when I initially met with Hara a couple of years ago to start talking about the need for a Sidur for young families or young children, the discussion was about whether we would really start from scratch or whether we would look at other Sidurim that were out there that other people had worked on, and what would our parameters be. So we did look at a lot of different Sidurim. The one given that we had was that this book would be part of the Mishkan Tefillah series, and therefore the layout and the formatting would be like Mishkan Tefillah. So that would be important because one of the goals that we decided upon was that we wanted to help ease our students into using Mishkan Tefillah and get them comfortable with the format. It was clear to us from the beginning, many of us who have used Mishkan Tefillah, that for younger children, it's not written for younger children, and the kids, both the English readings, are written for adults, and so the kids below, say, sixth grade, for sure, maybe even seventh grade, we were using it with them, but it wasn't ideal. So we wanted to create books that would fit in with Mishkan Tefillah and take the best of Mishkan Tefillah and adapt it for what was developmentally appropriate and spiritually appropriate for children and families. So that was the first goal. The second goal was for us to have a Reform prayer book for youth. We have Gates of Prayer for Young People, which was put together a number of years ago, is an excellent book in many, many ways, and we did take some of the readings from there as well, which were excellent, but we wanted to create something that would reflect a little bit better where our congregations are at now. So one of the issues with Gates of Prayer for Young People is that it doesn't include a full Hebrew liturgy in all the services. And many of us felt that we wanted to be able to decide which prayers to do or to skip with our kids based on what they knew and what was the minhag of the congregation rather than what was already laid out for us. So we wanted to establish a new Reform prayer book for youth that was part of the Mishkan Tefillah series. The third goal was to make prayer, and maybe the most important of all of them, was that we wanted to make prayer accessible and meaningful for young people. And that meant creating a worship experience that was really developmentally appropriate for kids, looking at both where they're at spiritually, what their vocabulary is like, what concepts and ideas resonate for them, etc. So once we knew what we wanted to do, we had to look at who would the book be for? And we decided we had really two groups that we wanted to reach. One was families for our family services, and the other was religious schools. So then the next question was, which services would we include? And we realized that covering both families and religious schools meant including a lot of material. For family services for most congregations happen on Shabbat, so we would need Shabbat liturgy. Some do it Friday night, some do it Saturday morning, which meant we needed morning and evening. Sometimes family services took place around other holidays, so we would need special holiday readings. And then there were other blessings and events that we wanted to mark as well, maybe a siddur ceremony, consecration, different things that involved our families and that they would be in synagogue for. The second group then was religious schools, and we wanted to have services available that were appropriate for religious schools. But when do most religious schools have their services? Well, some Sunday mornings, some weekday afternoons. So now, in addition to Shabbat and holidays, we needed weekday mornings and evenings. And then we had a conversation about ages that we wanted to reach. And we all agreed that what a tefillah experience for a first grader would look very different than a tefillah experience for a sixth grader. And we agreed that we needed really two different services or sets of services, one aimed at younger children and one aimed at more the reading, say the pre-Hebrew reading and the post-Hebrew readers, or the Hebrew readers, rather. So now we were worried that we would have a book that weighed about 400 pounds, and that was obviously not what we wanted to put in the hands of our kids. So at that point, we realized that we needed to create two different books, which is when Hara got in touch with Michelle and invited her to work on the book for the younger children, and our committee continued on in its work on the book with the for the older children. And that's the one that I'm going to speak a little bit more about, and then we'll hand it over to Michelle, who will talk more about the book that's out now, the siddur that's out now that is geared towards the younger children. So we really struggled with a lot of different questions as we worked. One was, are there different goals for a family siddur versus a religious school siddur? And how do we engage parents as well as children? That they're sometimes in very different places spiritually, that they come with different kinds of knowledge, that we have parents with all different levels of knowledge, Hebrew, not Hebrew, and then, of course, the question of transliteration came up right away because many of our parents need transliteration and we want them to be fully engaged in worship, but our children who are learning Hebrew, we don't want the transliteration in front of them so that they practice their Hebrew. So we wrestled with where to put the transliteration and where to put and where not to put transliteration, and I'll get back to that in a few minutes. We also looked at how much Hebrew to include and agreed that we would include as much as we could, a full service and as much as possible. I believe with the later blessings of the Shemona Esrei, we only included the Chatimot, but in most cases we included full tefillah, because we felt that it really needed to be up to each congregation, each prayer leader, to decide which prayers to include and what to skip if you had children with, you know, again, if you're leading a service with fourth graders versus sixth graders, you might be including different amounts of Hebrew. So, that was just a few of the questions that came up in the beginning as we worked on things. A few other pieces, and actually, I believe that on the website there is also some sample pages from the book, which isn't finished, but if you would like to pull up the sample pages from the CCR website, just to take a look at what it looks like at this point, as I talk about some of these other questions. We talked a lot about illustrations and artwork, what kind of artwork is appropriate, what would be meaningful, what would be engaging, and what would be distracting. We talked a lot about how does artwork contribute to our efforts to help kids engage in prayer and in worship. We talked about artwork as chidur mitzvah, and we talked about artwork as midrash, and that we really wanted artwork that would not just beautify the sidur, but would also get the kids thinking about what the prayer means, and maybe to have an opportunity for the leader to have a discussion about the artwork and how it connects to the prayer, if that's what they would like to do. But we were also very concerned that the artwork not be too, and the book as a whole, not be too busy, the pages not be too crazy and too distracting, because, and Steve Rao was certainly an important voice in this discussion about our special needs kids and helping them to be able to stay, literally to stay on the page with us, and not be overwhelmed or overstimulated or distracted by what was going on the page. One of the things that we loved about Mishkan Tefillah that we also wanted to bring to this book were the notes on the bottom of the page, that Mishkan Tefillah has notes that explain certain things, raise even some points for discussion, and we really wanted to have an educational piece, not just a prayer piece. And so we worked very hard, the committee worked very hard on the notes on the bottom of the page, that there would be explanations of choreography, there would be questions raised about the prayers. We sat with Mitkadem and looked at some of the vocabulary and Hebrew and ideas that were emphasized in Mitkadem, and tried to make sure where we could that we incorporated that. And since many of our kids are using Mitkadem, not all, but many of them are, to try to connect ideas that they might be learning in Mitkadem right there in the Sidur, to see them in the Sidur. And so that, to create an opportunity, again, as a choice, for the prayer leader to create a little more of a learner's minion experience and a teaching experience, or for those praying to simply have something else to read and think about as they're going through the tefillah.
This is Debbie. I just want to interrupt to let, I'm sorry, I apologize for interrupting. I just want to remind people that if you go to the CCIR website and you're looking for these documents, if you go to the Lifelong Learning tab and then go to teleconference calls and follow the links, you'll see the materials for this at the flyer page for today's call, or you can go to the homepage for CCIR's homepage and follow the link for the call to the flyer page, and the documents are posted. The documents, sample documents from the Sidurim, are posted on the right-hand side of the flyer page. Sorry, Paula, please continue.
That's okay. Great. Thank you. Thank you. I think it's really helpful for people to be able to take a look, and it's beautiful. I'm really very, very excited about the sample pages and what I think the Sidur is going to look like altogether. Okay, so I want to return for a second to the issue of translation and transliteration and talk very briefly about what we decided in the end. And we decided in the end that we would write, for the most part, although we looked a lot at Mishkan Tefillah as well, our translations would be a little bit more child-friendly. So several people from the committee worked on rewriting the translations that we used so that the language would be easier for the kids to access, so that they would have a a better sense reading the translation of what the prayer was about. We decided to put the transliteration in the family service, which is the Shabbat services, and not in the weekday religious school service, again, encouraging our kids not, especially the 5th, 6th, and 7th graders, as their Hebrew gets better, not to be looking at the transliteration, but to be reading the Hebrew. And we put the translation, space was a huge issue, even once we decided on two books. Space was a very big issue, not to make it too busy and too huge and overwhelming. So we decided that we would put the, since we were putting the transliteration in the family service, we would leave the translations out, but we put the translations in the religious school service so that the kids would have a chance, especially if we're teaching more, which I tend to do in a religious school service, that they could also look at the translations there, that that would be a useful tool. Okay. Obviously, we included a lot of music. We had a few members of the committee that worked on that. It was difficult. We wanted to put in music that would not become dated. I don't know how you know what in our movement is going to really stick for the long haul and what's not, because you really don't. But we also left space, or we're going to leave space in the back for people to add music that they want to add. We included the full range of Hebrew tefillot so that each prayer leader could choose. And I think that covers what I wanted to cover. Again, most of the work that I and the committee did was on the book for, I guess we said 4th through 6th graders or 3rd through 6th graders, somewhere around there. And at this time, I'd like to turn it over to Michelle or back to Debbie, whichever way that works.
That's fine.
Talk about the other book.
We can go from editor to editor, from youth to children. It's fine. Please, Michelle, welcome to the call.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure. So this has been such an exciting gift of a project to get to work on. I was flattered to be asked by Hera and have so enjoyed hearing people's comments as they've used this new prayer book in their congregations and with their community. It really was an incredible gift to write. So I want to jump in and talk about some of the things that we thought about when putting it together and that I thought about as I created the text for it. So, you know, there's this difficult question of how do you take a book, and I think Paula would agree, of looking at this incredibly in-depth, amazing book of Mishkan Tefillah and saying, okay, so how do I make that work for little kids? And even more so, knowing that their parents are going to be in the room a good amount of the time. And for my group, quite honestly, how do I make it work for a group that isn't even necessarily readers? That a lot of this is going to be read to them, or they're going to be sounding it out, or that it'll be used as a tool as people tell stories and wind in and out of the book itself. So when you look at the book, you'll realize immediately that we really wanted to keep that the navigation bar on the right and sometimes left-hand side, but we now color-coded those navigation bars. So each section of the service is a different color so that you can say to the kids, we are now in Shema and her blessings, and you'll notice all the prayers we do that are in the blue navigation bar, those are going to be part of Shema and her blessings, so that we can start to teach kids those really sophisticated concepts of how a siddur breaks down, but do it in a way that's appropriate for this age group. The other thing that we wanted to keep from Mishkan Tefillah is, and I guess not really keep, is use for now so that they can prepare to understand the adult Mishkan Tefillah, is that the right side really holds the Hebrew and the literal prayer, and the left side holds either, in this case, a creative translation or an image. And one of the things we thought a lot about is for children of this age, pictures are as much a inspiration as texts are. And so Katie Lipset, who did the illustrations for this, did a beautiful job of creating very simple but engaging, interesting pictures for each of these ideas. So the other thing, and if you have the ability to look at the text in front of you, I'm going to take a look at pages 34 and 35, which is the Hashkizenu. This is one of the examples of something we were very cognizant of when creating this, that if we were going to do translations, they not only needed to be simplified, we needed to feel the freedom to play around with them a little, to really pull on images that would work for a young child. And so that's how I ended up with Hashkizenu being translated as tuck us into our beds, Adonai, our God, and wake us up feeling strong and healthy. Spread over us your blanket of peace. So it's an image that my hope is that a young child could really get their head around and feel the comfort that I think is inherent in the Hashkizenu, but we sometimes miss with, or young children would miss with other language. And you see on page 35, we have an example, not of a creative reading, but of using an illustration of a little boy curled into his bed, this great bed that has moons and stars and suns on his blanket. And underneath it, then we put the Chatima of the prayer. So the Chatima is on both the right side and the left side, just like we see in the adult version of Mishkan Tefillah. But this is an opportunity to stop and say, you know, look at this picture of this little boy asleep. Imagine yourself just like him, curled up, tucked into your bed, with this feeling of God surrounding you, and that you've been tucked in by your mom or your dad or your grandparents or people who love you, and tucked in by God as well. So that we can really draw on that picture, and then after that, join together in reading to them the Chatima, and if parents are with you, to be able to join as well. When you look at the book, by the way, just like Paula was talking about, we really knew that people would be using this in two settings, either in a religious school or in a family service. And so it includes both Shabbat, morning and evening, and also a daily service, morning and evening, in order for people to use it in different places. So the next thing I wanted to look at were the God concepts. And this, to me, was really key, that we know embedded in the Siddur are all different images and ideas and thoughts about God. And one of the most beautiful things to me about the adult version of Mishkan Tefillah is those readings on the left-hand side that pull those out for the modern reader. Right, that really look at that there's lots of different ways within the Jewish world to look at God. And it was really important to me that in a book for this age group, that we from the very beginning started to take what we know from so many amazing Jewish children's books that have come out over the last few years, the work of Lawrence Kushner and, Palacco, I'm blanking on her first name, but all these people who have written these beautiful, Sally Eisenberg Sasso, who's written these beautiful books of different God concepts, and it was really important to me to pull that into this book and from the very beginning to open up that those ideas into our actual prayer. So if you look at page 42, that is a version of the Givorot. And here in the translation as well, I went for a very traditional view of God, right? That God is mighty, who gives life to all, and then, of course, bringing in our seasonal text, source of power in the world. This is sort of, for me, that traditional power, somewhat distant idea of God that I think is really important for them to have. But now we move much closer. If you look at 91, and actually I'm not sure 91 got into the materials we gave you, but I'll read you a little of it. 91 is a version of the Shemona Esrei that has a very personal God, where we first remember Abraham and Sarah and how God took care of them. And then we ask, help me, God, to also know you. Help me to be strong and brave. Teach me to be holy. Help me find the words to thank you, Adonai, my God. Teach me your peace and help me be a peacemaker for all the world. And the idea here is to open up the possibility of a very personal God, of a God who knows us and cares about us and is involved in our lives. Then if we look at page 13, we're going to have another idea of God. And in this one, this is the idea of God as creator, but a very different concept. I sometimes imagine God sitting on the soft grass in the Garden of Eden, with art supplies scattered about. Glue and paper, clay and crayons, colored yarn and colored sand. God cuts and pastes, imagines and draws, pushes and forms the clay into the perfect shape. And from there we go on thanking God for the amazing bodies that God creates, but in this very concrete, tangible way that kids can sort of cock their head and go, oh, just like I create, God creates. And that's where I learn that creative power is from connecting to God. It's also a great opportunity for us as service leaders to talk a little bit about God personified and what does that mean. And as we try to understand God, that we put God in our terms and what we know, and yet God is also something bigger. So if we look at page 23, there's an example from the Yotzer Or. One of the things that was important to me was expanding the way we thought about God in the language we use. And so you'll see scattered through the prayer book where instead of using God, we use other words like light or life. And when we do that, I capitalize the letter so that you can point out to the kids that that's a visual clue that we're talking about God, but that God really can be the light in the world. So in this prayer we have, the sun rises and the black of night fades away. Brilliant oranges, pinks, and yellows fill the sky. Blessed is the light of day. And then we move through as the world is created, ending with the Chatima of Baruch Ata Adonai. Blessed is the light of the world. And that light is capitalized because for me in this prayer, that light is God. That light that fills the universe both in a very physical sense and in a spiritual sense is God. Another example of that can be found on page 25 where we have Ahavat Olam, where God is the love. So God is the hug you get from a friend and the kiss on the head from a parent. God is the good job from a coach. God is love in the world. God is the color of fall leaves and the cool water when you dip your hands in the river. God is the sweet smell of spring flowers. God is the love in the world. And the prayer goes on to talk about the gift of learning and of God being that gift for us in the form of that love. Not God having love, but God being that love. So for me, these God concepts were so important to not only bring out, but to really vary, to really allow our young children a prayer book that shows them what I think we want all adults to embrace as well, that God is very multifaceted and that one of the great gifts of Judaism is that God isn't defined for us, but instead we define God through every interaction and in every moment. So the other thing with this, it was interesting, you know, and Paula said they've been so cognizant of the older kids' book to include so much music. We actually were very cognizant in the younger kids' book to not include any music, except for at the very beginning of the Shabbat section, there's two or three classics, you know, like Bim Bam and ones like that. The reason was, and I imagine you know if you work with young children's prayer, for the most part, the songs that we use in services come and go. In this age group, there's always new stuff being created. The Allards have done some beautiful work, but some of their songs were very, quote-unquote, in a few years ago, and others of their songs are in now. There's great work by Sababa. There's all sorts of terrific bands that have done great stuff, but we realize that any of them we put in, the possibility of them being dated quickly was pretty high. As well that we knew that our target audience, we were going to be doing songs that were pretty simple and were created to be taught verbally, orally, and didn't necessarily need to be written down anyway. But with that said, we did intentionally leave, I guess, like 3 or 4 pages in the back of the book that individual synagogues can sticker to put the songs that they sing and that are part of their community. So in most cases in the book, we have the images with the Chatima. The left side either has an image or a creative version of the prayer. And then the right side has the text with very simplified translations, as well as making choices about what from the text we included. So In most cases, it's two or three lines of the Hebrew, but not all of the Hebrew, in order to give them some. And that, for me, was another important thing that Hara and I talked a lot about in creating this book, is that we wanted, just as Paula said, as they looked at both of the books, for congregations to be able to include what they wanted to and what was the minhag of their community, but to not have the book make that decision for them, and that they can have the full plethora of prayers and choose what they want to do. And that was really important. As you probably know, many young children's books cut out a bunch of the prayers, and that's how they simplify and shorten it. That was not the route we went. We went to simplifying the Hebrew and using less of the Hebrew, but every prayer is actually there. And there were two reasons for that. One is that I just believe that we needed them all there. It makes me crazy when you have prayer books that cut out large amounts. But two is that we wanted it to be able to act as a parallel book. So if your congregation is using the adult Mishkan Tefillah on a Friday night service, you actually could hand this book out to your children, and every prayer that's being done with the adults is in this book as well. So you would need a parent who could sort of navigate. One rabbi shared with me that they would, you know, say page such and such for adults and page such and such for children, so that they could help navigate it as well. Someone else had mentioned to me that they actually made a cheat sheet, a sheet of paper that was given to the parents that listed all the prayers they were doing and then listed the corresponding kids' pages, so that the parent could help the child flip through the book to see the prayers as well. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I wanted to be able to include. There's suns and moons. Let me just bring that to your attention. In addition to the navigation bar being color-coded by the section, we also realized that we were going to need to give some visual clues so that kids would know where they were in the service as you moved around a little and which service they were supposed to be looking at. So one possibility, obviously, was to create one Shabbat evening service and a second Shabbat morning service, and then another prayer, another section that has the weekday morning and another section with a weekday evening, and then we had a book that no kindergarten or second grader was going to be able to hold. So we pulled back from that and created evening and morning services together, and the way that we created for the kids and adults and rabbis and educators to navigate them is that they're marked with a sun or a moon on the page. So obviously a sun is a daytime prayer, a moon is a nighttime prayer, and if they're both there, then it's a prayer that we do all the time. And this has actually been something that it's really been a joy to get feedback on, that people have found that method really helpful to also help families and adults understand the order of the prayer service and the different pieces that come in and out based on when we're worshiping. So all of those things, I hope, come together to make a prayer book that can be really useful and meaningful for our community. I'll give some praise to Dan Medwin, who has worked on the electronic versions of this. And the Mishkan Tefillah for Children is available as an iPad app that he spent hours on doing the research so that when you flip it, it actually flips in the Hebrew direction, right? If you think about an iPad book, normally we're used to going in the Western direction. But you actually flip it in the other direction, and then it has some different activities and ability to write your own prayers and do some things on the iPad app. And it's also available as a visual tefillah to be able to project the pictures and the words. So I think those two are just great additions for congregations who are exploring different modes of worship. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Michelle and Paula. We are grateful to you for all the work that you've done and your committees have done to create these opportunities for our children and our youth and our congregations and parents and families. And we are pleased that Stephen Rao is on the call as well, who's been very active in these projects. And Steve, I believe that you might have received some questions or have some questions to pose.
Okay. I don't see any additional questions right here, but I do have a number of questions that I thought I'd answer. First of all, I want to say thank you to our leaders of our team, because it is a great group put together. But with such a varied movement, the first question would be, how would a group like this take on such a task to make a usable document that would work in congregations all over the country of different sizes, et cetera? And so really, who was on that team? And I wanted to answer that by sharing that it was made up of a very diverse group of rabbis and rabbi educators from around the country. from the East and the West Coast, from the South and the Midwest. It was made up of a team of large and small congregations, those much more traditional and those much less traditional, and made up of rabbis who teach in the classroom and rabbis who act as shlichei tzibor. And the refreshing part of this work was that as we were going through the questions and trying to figure out what would be most usable for our congregations, every decision was completely unanimous, and so that we feel that the documents that we have created, the Sidur that we have created, will be able to be used in congregations of all sizes and all places in the country. Additionally, at one point we asked the question about what would be the use for day schools or camps. And so we also worked on consulting some of our day school educators and incorporate and camp educators and incorporated some of their needs, including the use of the non-transliterated text, especially for the day schools. A lot of the holiday rituals and the lesser used holiday rituals, including the counting of the Omer. Another question that we will pose is was about the songs, and I think that Michelle touched on that a little bit, but that was a big discussion of why some of our most popular songs that are so embedded in our service, why are those not included directly in the text itself? And there, I think the real exception, and Paula can answer this as well, was Debbie Friedman's Misha Berach, which is included in the text. Our feeling was that while we were so varied, we wanted to make sure that this would be a document that would be contemporary, but would not date us. Many or most of the songs that our congregations use, and our educators use, and our rabbis use, are in the back of the prayer book, so that it's easily flipped back and forth to add in any of our songs that song leaders might be leading. Before I go on, Paula, would you like to add anything else to any of these questions?
I would just add to that, I mean, it was a funny discussion because as we sat around the table, a bunch of us are on faculty at different camps, and I remember two or three of us bringing up songs that at the camp that we serve are really staples, and yet the other people said, oh, that's not a big deal at our camp. So it just showed us how sort of regionalized and, certain songs connect in different places and become important, and so that's why we didn't include a lot of those songs, because we were really trying to make sure that the material, that space was really an issue. We didn't, again, want the Sidur to weigh 500 pounds, and we wanted to make sure that what we did put in was sort of more eternal than trendy.
The next question, and I think Paula answered this very well at the beginning, was looking at the special needs. With so much that goes on the page in a Mishkan Tefillah, how do we approach this in terms of students with special needs or those who learn differently on the text? And if you do have a chance to look at the sample pages online, you will notice that there are a couple things going on. First of all, we were very careful to keep the Hebrew text clear and easy to read without too many distractions, without too many accents, etc. You'll notice that the pictures on one side of the page keep the text to one page so that our kids can focus on one thing in particular. There's not much dancing on the page. There is a little bit of lighter or colorful text around the side or on the bottom, but the Hebrew text itself is clear and direct. The next thing I wanted to talk about was the prompts that are on the bottom of the page, and why do we have these? And we did so for a number of different uses. First of all, we wanted to assist teachers, tutors, or non-professionals, or rabbis and cantors who just don't have that strong teaching background, to allow them to get to the heart and the soul of the learners as they're going through the text, to keep it from just being a dry text that can be enriched with questions that go along with the liturgy. Additionally, we wanted to give families an opportunity when they use this book to start the conversation. So for the non-Jewish parent or the non-Jewishly educated parent, he or she can start a question with his or her child asking about the liturgy itself. And also we wanted to keep, not only to keep the interest of this student or the family while they're reading through the text, but to allow for some spiritual thought during the service and some growth as well there. Another question that was asked, and I think that we've addressed this a little bit, is why is a hard copy of the book being published in a time when congregations are starting to think about visual tefillah? One of the first things we thought about talked about was that we don't feel that congregations are in a complete place ready to move on to complete visual tefillah right now. The technology is just not there, or the congregations just cannot afford the technology for this. We also felt like if it's a goal for the our educators to teach our children Hebrew toward becoming bar and bat mitzvah and working from the Mishkan Tefillah text that they'll be using in their service, so too we needed to provide a learning tool for our children that would be the first steps in getting them toward using the Mishkan Tefillah. Pedagogically, we felt that it gives all of the kids an advantage to have a text to work from, that they can they don't have to focus whether they have issues of visual issues on a screen or flipping through, sharing an iPad or something like that, that they actually have their own text to work from and to learn from. And as Michelle said, for the Siddur for younger children is now an iPad app and an electronic version, and this will be eventually the case for the Mishkan Tefillah for our family. Finally, a sixth question is, well, actually, I think I've covered all of our questions now.
All right. I wonder if the panelists, if the presenters have anything that they want to share by way of final words or last thoughts for this session or for each other, to each other. Anything else that you want to share with anybody by any chance?
I would just like to say, this is Paula, that I'm just very, very thankful and grateful to Michelle for the work that she did, and to Hera, and for all of the folks on my committee, including Stephen, who put in an incredible amount of time, and that I'm really excited. Can't wait to have this book in my hands.
I also want to jump in and say, if you haven't had a chance to look at these sample pages, please do so. They are very exciting. And I know that for us as a congregation, we cannot wait to get our hands on the physical copy of the book and to start bringing us back into the 21st century of Reformed Jewish liturgy.
And I would just echo my thanks. It was such an incredible process working with Paula and Hera and the illustrator and everyone together. So it's really a joy, and I can't wait to see the next one.
Well, thank you so much, everybody, for being on the call. Thank you to our listeners, and thank you especially to our presenters, to Michelle and Paula and Stephen and Joe. We thank Hera again, and we congratulate you on this amazing work that you've done for our movement and for our families. And we thank everybody for participating. Should you have questions or suggestions about our Lifelong Learning Leadership Initiatives program, please feel free to contact me at my email address, dprinz@csernet.org. We hope you all stay safe and warm in the next few days, and we wish you a lovely day. Yom Tov, and thank you for being with us.